Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I'm so pleased to have with me in the studio, Nan Marshall. Nan, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Nan, and I am a jeweler. I like to work with metal and gems and stones and unusual objects, including, you know, rusty washers and bits of paint off the curbs and all kinds of unusual bits and pieces.
That's really cool. Nan, did you start out as a jeweler?
No, I was really a scientist. I never thought I had an artistic bone in my body.
Wow, really?
But an interest in Japan drew me into doing Japanese flower arranging, ikebana.
Uh-huh.
And the teacher really liked my creations, and that kind of gave me a little bit of an inkling that I had a creative side.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to become interested in jewelry, but I don't have pierced ears, so I had to start making my own earrings. And that led me to making jewelry and going to art fairs for about a year and a half, a totally different type of jewelry. And then I gave it up again for many a year until a friend here in Viroqua suggested that I join her in taking a metalwork class.
Cool.
And I thought I would be horrible at metalworking because, you know, it always seemed perfect and polished and precision. And we got to the class and the teacher was sort of like, oh, yeah, do whatever you want. Just cut this, clip that, just jam these two things together. And I thought, wow, yeah, I like this.
I can do that.
I can do that. And, you know, the more wrinkled the metal was or odd the piece that she had found, the better. And I was like, inspired by her enthusiasm and by the materials she used.
Mm-hmm.
And I started making a few things for myself, and people liked them, and the rest is history.
Very cool. Very cool. I've had the privilege to travel to Japan a couple times, and one of the things that I have so much respect for in Japanese culture, specifically Japanese craft and art, is I think a reverence for the raw material, and the Japanese tend to combine that so well with extreme precision. There is this feeling of intentionality to a lot of Japanese craft that I really appreciate. Like, if you're gonna do something, you do it really, really well. And I think it's interesting. Already I'm hearing in your stories this idea of, like, science, precision. You know, there's sort of this idea of, like, the number side or the analytical side of things combined with creativity. And I think that's really interesting that you have this, like, affinity for Japanese culture, but that also has roots in your own, like, your own personal history. That's really neat.
Yeah, that's true. Although I don't have the precision. I just don't have the coordination to be precise about things. But
sure.
I do enjoy a good part of the process is not only figuring out what I want to create, what techniques and what interesting bits and pieces go into it, but how to put it together, because everything I make is really one of a kind for the most part. And so I have this vision, but it's really difficult to make it happen sometimes. You know, how do you make everything join together and behave in the way that you want it to? And so that's maybe where the science part comes in.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit more about, like, the process of metalworking? I mean, what's involved? That's an art form and a craft that I am really unfamiliar with.
Well, when I started, I didn't solder, so it was all cold connections is what they call it, which is mainly riveting or wiring things together.
Oh, okay.
And so I would, you know, drill holes through things and try to make nice rivets. And a part of that is a construction, too. If things are not flat, then it's much harder to rivet them.
Yeah.
Or if they're round and trying to drill holes through them.
Yeah.
But when COVID hit, it gave me a little free time to take online soldering classes, metal smithing.
Cool.
And I had to move out of my studio because my studio was faced a wall of books, which doesn't work well with a torch.
Yep. Yep, that's going to be a fire hazard.
Yeah. And so then I went from just sort of cutting and sawing and hammering on things to melting things and fusing things and soldering things. So there are a couple techniques. One, of course, is the soldering, where you join two clean pieces of metal together by using solder, and you heat it, and the solder melts and holds the bits together. But you can also get that effect, not with things that are super thin, but by fusing the metal. So you try to heat the metal just enough so that the molecules of the two pieces of metal, just before they melt, sort of fuse into each other.
Oh,
you
wow.
You have to do a dance with the torch. You know, you go in and out, in and out, in and out. You got to get it just hot enough for the melting to happen, or, you know, the fusing to happen, but not so hot that everything just turns into a ball of silver in the case.
Yeah. And can you see that visually?
Sort of. Yes and no. You get this bright silvery color. But sometimes you think that you've achieved the fusing, and when you quench it, drop it into the cold water, everything comes apart. And you know that you didn't quite do it. You have to give it a go again.
Can you do it again?
Yes, you can.
Okay. So you can have a go at fusing and joining in that method over and over again?
Essentially.
To a certain extent?
To a certain extent. You know, sure. If you go too far, the metal starts getting kind of pitted, and maybe that's okay. That's the effect you're okay with. But eventually it'll get sort of brittle too.
Okay. Yeah. It's, I imagine it might be empowering to like work with flame and metal in a way where you're like, oh, I can intuit when these two pieces of metal are like going to successfully join together.
Right. Yes.
That's really cool.
But it takes time, you know, and
yeah.
One of the things about this is that I don't do it full time. You know, I have to go away and leave it for a week and come back and do it for a few hours, and I go and I come back. And so in that process, I sort of lose what I would have gained if I did it full time.
I see. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm a little sad because I know that I've lost my touch, and then it comes back. It's just then I have to leave again.
Right, right. And so do you have a studio that's like separate from your kind of living space?
Yes. So when I started using the torch, I knew I had to move out of my basement, which is where I started.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little outbuilding that didn't have any electricity or heat or water. But I set up shop in there in the summertime, and it was so I wouldn't blow anything up or melt anything precious. And that worked pretty well until wintertime, and it got colder and colder.
Yeah.
And eventually even it was just too cold for the torch to heat the metal enough
the
fusing or soldering to take place. So I decided to rent a space in the Landmark Center. So I have a little tiny room there. It's 8 by 15 feet.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if you have a craft where you need tools, well, of course, there's always more tools to be had.
Mm-hmm.
So the place is full of tools and little bits and pieces. And it doesn't have a real window. It sort of has a window that looks out into a room that has a window. So I get a little bit of idea of what's happening outside.
You know if it's daylight or nighttime.
Right.
Maybe if it's sunny or cloudy, sure.
But I love my little cave, my little home away from home.
Mm.
And it's quite cozy, and I really enjoy spending time there.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah. And so you mentioned that your work is sort of intermittent, right?
Yes.
Do you intend to have a, you know, is it like Mondays I go to the studio kind of a thing, or is it just sort of whenever you have time?
Well, I guess there's an intention for it to be certain times, but unfortunately, everything else seems to get in the way, and it seems to sense, like if I have that Friday open on my calendar, for some reason it attracts all kinds of things that I cannot avoid.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I do my best to try to work out a schedule that I can stick to, but it doesn't happen all that often.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that you prefer to kind of show up to the studio and then sort of let the space or the materials sort of dictate what you're doing or what you're focusing on? Or do you come to the studio with like a to-do list?
I like to just show up and see what happens. I mean, obviously sometimes I have a definite need to accomplish things and I have an idea what they are. You know, mm-hmm. for instance, if I have an art fair coming up, then I know that it's time to start making things that I can make more quickly.
Yeah.
So I have enough for the art fair. But otherwise, I like to just go in and sometimes I have a technique or something that's inspired me that I mm-hmm. want to try.
Yeah.
But other times I just come in and I look at my bits and pieces and, you know, I'll find one that inspires me and mm-hmm. then I'll try to figure out what goes with that piece or how I can use it.
Very cool. And you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that you're like picking stuff up off the ground and making jewelry out of it. How did that start? And can you give some examples of the stuff that you make into your pieces?
I don't know. I think I've always liked things that are unusual or oddly shaped. And so, you know, one of the ways to get supplies is to go to, there used to be a bead and button show, it was called, in Milwaukee.
Oh,
and they'd
cool.
have vendors come from all over. And the things that attracted me, I mean, obviously I like the beautiful things, but I always like the weird buffalo horn things or the dinosaur bones or, I don't know, just the, whatever the most odd thing was there,
yeah.
that was usually what would attract me.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. So when you, before you did metalwork, you made jewelry in a different way, but that's not the only art form that you have kind of dabbled in, is that right?
That's correct. It was, for a while I used to want to try to do something with textiles. I love fibers. I love the texture mm-hmm. of fibers. I love the colors. And I, you know, so I learned knitting. I learned how to spin. I used to weave. But I never did any of those particularly well. I mean, I did them okay for myself, you know, or maybe to give as a gift. But the other thing is they take a lot of time. And so you mm-hmm. have to do them well at a really high level to be able to make back the money that
for
the time that you've invested in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just never reached that level. And it seemed like finally with the metalwork that I was able to do that.
Yeah, so you kind of hit a sweet spot. That's great. And then when did you start actually participating in things like art fairs or the art tour?
So I took the class with my friend in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And we took some more classes in 2018. And in 2019, I became a member at Viva Gallery here in Viroqua.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I can't, it must have been that year that my friend was joined the Winding Roads Art Tour, and it was at her house, and mm-hmm. she invited me to participate at her place.
Nice. How was that first year experience for you?
Oh, it was really fun. You know, it's nice to sell things in galleries, but for me, I really enjoy talking to the people about my work or just talking to them about the artsy things they're wearing or just seeing what they're enjoying at the art fair.
Yeah.
Just, I love that contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really nice to have people come over and just talk about art, all types of art.
Yeah. Do you find that when you create, specifically when you create for an art fair, are you thinking about what people were picking up the last time? Or are you just kind of going with what materials you have?
That's a tough one. I would say it's a little bit of both. But I guess I'm more aware. Everything I make is sort of large, or, well, not everything, but I tend to make things that are large and sort of organic and raw. And I know that people tend to like, you know, everyday jewelry being smaller and smoother. And, you know, a lot of times people really enjoy my work, but they feel it might not feel comfortable wearing it, especially not every day.
It's a statement piece, yeah.
And So I mean, I know that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do try to make some things that are smaller because, you know, it's nice to sell things.
Yeah.
But even though I know that and sometimes try to keep that in mind, I think in the end, I still just make things that I like.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not too concerned about that. I mean, if I get enough people like my things and are willing to try them, that it all works out.
Yeah, yeah. That's a theme that I am recognizing in the podcasts that I've recorded, is that, you know, every artist that comes in here typically has this refrain of like, I do what I like to do. I make what I find beautiful. And the fact that it resonates with other people, so much the better. Because as you say, like, selling stuff is pretty nice. Like, it's nice when you can make a little money doing what really makes you happy and is fulfilling. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I am curious, if you think about your creative practice, is there a metaphor or an image that you might ascribe to your creative practice? And I'll give maybe just, I don't want to lead too much, but, you know, the Winding Roads art tour, that image can be kind of considered metaphorically as well as physically, right? We have literal windy roads here in this region that people are driving on to see all these different studios. But I, you know, in my thinking about it, the winding road is a really common metaphor for the creative practice. We talk about it's the journey, not the destination kind of thing, you know? And so that has me curious about whether you might consider an image that meets with your idea of your creative practice.
I don't know. I mean, definitely the winding road thing works because the thing I like about driving around here is that you don't know what's right around the corner.
Yeah.
You know, and then you see this really beautiful farm or, you know, little forest or something off in the side, or just a hillside sprinkled with cows.
Yeah.
And then you drive away, you know, you turn away and it's brief, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. You just don't know where you're going, and all of a sudden something pops up that attracts mm-hmm. your attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the really cool thing about your work is that you have those joints, those fusings, you know, these sort of materials that maybe you wouldn't expect together. And you have the process, that intuition of making those things meet and changing the physical material, like in your studio, to make those things meet. And then, so you have that like brief, like over the hill, sort of like, oh, there it is kind of moment. And then that gets set into that piece and someone else gets to take that home.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that's really cool.
But I think another aspect of it too, for me, is that I've noticed over time that people have told me that they really like a certain piece, but they're not sure that they can wear it or that they feel uncomfortable, that people, it's sort of like they're afraid of letting people see who they really are.
Oh.
And I feel like there's a lot of that going around these days. You know, I feel like people shouldn't have to be afraid to be who they are. I mean, I feel like we need a little more tolerance about who people are, the types of people we are, and, you know, a little more interest. Like, I mean, with the art fairs, I enjoy seeing what people are wearing and talking to them about it, what it means, and finding out who they are. And I don't agree necessarily with everything that people say, but I think it's so much more interesting to listen and try to understand where people are coming from. And I think, you know, sometimes jewelry is actually a portal into people, you know, allows insight, and we should all pay a little more attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's such a cool, I hadn't really thought about, I mean, obviously jewelry as like a form of self-expression, but this idea of jewelry as a portal or a door into a deeper understanding of someone, I think is really cool. That's a very cool insight, Nan.
Thanks. I hope it works that way. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Well, there's also, I just think the layered kind of understanding that when you buy someone something from someone at an art fair, you're not just going to a store and purchasing this piece and you don't know who made it, or you don't know anything about the creator of it. There is that added layer, and I think it's really special of knowing, like standing in front of you and seeing the creator of this piece and knowing that you had intention and creativity and intuition behind its genesis, and then saying like, that's also right for me, you know, because then we now have a bond.
Exactly.
It's not just, this is a pretty piece of jewelry.
Right.
There's animation and relationship there, in a similar way to like when I take a sip out of my Greg Cheesebro mug in the morning, right? And I think about Greg. And I'm able to like have that personal relationship, not just with the piece, but also with the person who made the piece.
And also, people often wonder, like, why would you want to buy something that's handmade when you could buy a similar item that maybe is more precise or, you know, quote unquote, better than the handmade item.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's the fact that the handmade item isn't precise.
Yeah.
That makes it much more interesting to me, because it's the only one exactly like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all the better if there's, I don't know if you call it a little imperfection, but, you know, little imprecision in the piece, because then you know that a person has tended to making that piece.
Yeah.
They have put energy and time into creating that.
Mm-hmm.
There's just much more life to the piece than something you pick up that was manufactured by a machine.
Yeah.
You know, that feels kind of dead to me.
Right. Right. I would have to agree. There's definitely animation there. I think that's spot on. Well, as we kind of wrap things up here, Nan, is there any last words that you'd like to share? Anything that you'd like to plug, aside from the Winding Roads Art Tour, of course, coming up June 7th and 8th. Are there any events that are going on that you're related to that you'd like to share?
Well, I'll just be at, I guess, other art fairs throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Art in the Green in La Crosse.
Okay.
And many of the artists here have things at the River City Gallery in La Crosse, so there are lots of places to go around and visit and see other artists. Work. It's amazing to me how many great artists of all different types we have in this area. We're really very fortunate.
We are, aren't we? Yeah, it's really cool. Well, thank you so much, Nan.
Well, thank you for inviting me in. I've enjoyed this.